Okay, so noun phrases and noun phrase structure. I think this will be somewhat of a review for a lot of you who have taken exploring grammar. I know that you've been diligently reading the exploring grammar booklet ever since you've had that course. So a lot of this is stuff you probably read over the last weekend or the last month or so, but maybe you've had to read something else in the time being, and you need a little bit of review about noun phrases and noun phrase structure. And this could also be important for our first home exam. So let's try to see if we have any questions that can be answered. We'll start a little bit, wrap up on verb phrases, although we're not going to totally leave verb phrases behind after this lesson. We're still going to be able to talk about them a little bit, and I have some things coming up about, mood and modality and all these kinds of things. But remember that verb phrases, or what Downing and Locke call verbal groups. So remember the Downing book that the is linked to on the Moodle page that the material is drawn from here uses the term verbal group. A lot of other grammars are going to use the term verbal phrase. They mean the same thing here. Verbal phrases or verb phrases have finite verb forms. And these finite verb forms are going to function as the predicator in the sentence. So the kind of main verb there has to be finite. There has to be something marking finiteness in it, whether it's the tensed lexical verb, so walks, walked, or maybe it's a tensed auxiliary, has walked, has had walked, or maybe it's a modal verb, will, can, could, shall, should, something like that. Or then you see some other tense auxiliaries there with has been walking, had been walking, these kinds of things. Remember, though, for our analysis, the predicator is not part of the predicate. So when you see these two different terms, recognize that they refer to two different things here. So Downing keeps the verb phrases for the predicator. So the only thing that can realize the predicator is a verb phrase. And it's going to be a finite verb phrase as well. Whereas other grammars will talk about the whole predicate. And the whole predicate here is green in the second sentence. So the man painted the house. The predicate is the verb phrase acting as the predicator. And then it's obligatory complements, whether it's an object or a subject complement or whatever it is, the obligatory elements after it. Whereas the predicator is in the first one, just the verb phrase. The man painted the house, it's painted there is the predicator. So just keep that in mind. There are the nine finite verb phrases, or forms of the verbs that are non-finite, cannot function as predicators. So when we have our predicator, it's going to be shown finiteness somehow. Just be a little bit careful. Like if you see earlier, this has walked, had walked, the tense is going to be shown on the auxiliary for these. Sometimes also the tense isn't shown. So there might be a modal, and what follows a modal is just the base form of the verb. Cool. A little bit on aspect. I have some more about this coming up on a Word doc on the Moodle page. But progressive aspect is always related to incompleteness or ongoingness, can be both finite and non-finite. Perfective aspect is always going to talk about a past event that is relevant at the moment of speaking. So the moment of whenever the language is. The moment that the language using the perfective aspect is being said or being presented as being said, then it's going to describe an event that's still relevant to that time. Also recognize, you can have like Well, try not to cross some wires with thinking about, you know, passive voice and forms that look like past tense. And so thinking about them as being somehow in the past, right? Being located in a time before, because we have something like, you know, if we had a phrase, will be guaranteed. This is passive voice, but it's pointing towards the future. It's pointing to the future with the help of a modal verb will, but there's no tense here. There's no tense going on. English doesn't have a future tense, and English often uses these modal verbs to point to the future, but modal verbs aren't tensed either. We can't really say that would is the past tense of will. That's not really how tense works. Or could is the past tense of can or something like that. We wouldn't say that. So if we recognize here, we have kind of forms that carry an aspect of progressiveness with here, existing resources will be used for reducing inequality and enabling a better quality of life. We have the passive voice here will be used. And then they have these non-finite ing forms, reducing, enabling. So we're pointing to some future time where these things will be ongoing processes, right? But we don't necessarily have the progressive in the sense that we don't have be plus the ing right next to each other like that. These non-finite progressive forms are in active voice, though. So the whole thing is in passive voice, but these things on their own there are in active voice. Okay. All right, let's move on to noun phrases then. Probably pretty familiar to you. I think nouns are the ones that everyone has the most. Well, if we were to draw different phrases out of a hat, and you would have to give a presentation on them, and you picked noun phrases, you'd probably feel better than if you picked, I don't know, adverb phrases, maybe. Maybe that's the thing. I don't know. But noun phrases, we have different kinds of nouns in English. We have proper nouns, we have common nouns, and we have pronouns. And then we can cut these up a little bit more, too, into we cut the common nouns up into countable and uncountable ones. And if you remember from either exploring grammar, or I think this comes up in or came up in the course Introduction to Language Studies, talking about how, you know, some things are kind of always treated as uncountable in English, like especially granular things like sand and sugar and these kinds of things are treated as uncountable. Some abstract ones like research and furniture are treated as uncountable. We can't have one furniture, two furnitures, three furnitures. I'm talking about standard English right now. I mean, some other varieties are going to have, you'll see research is coming up, especially with newer varieties. So newer Englishes, European Englishes, where they're maybe influenced by another language, where that language has the word for research could be plural. Like I think Finnish research is countable. So maybe it influences Finglish or a Finnish English or a Nordic English, something like that. But they don't have to be that new Englishes either. I mean, you may have Indian English may talk about researches. I don't know. So let's remember that these things are relative as well. But some of them are like always countable, like, you know, apples and chairs and this kind of stuff. These, we have one apple, two apples, three apples, this kind of thing. Concrete ones, nouns we can touch with our fingers. Abstract ones are ones we can't touch. So love is an abstract noun, and I'm not being poetic here. You can't touch love. I mean, we could probably do like a grammar poem or something and get all real metaphorical there. but still describe grammar. But these are things you can't touch, abstract nouns. Concrete nouns, you know, apple, table, stuff like that. And also, I suppose, things that you can't touch because they're not real, but if they were real, you could touch them. So, you know, I don't know, unicorn is a concrete noun. Not real, but, you know, in our hearts, they are real. And then we have your pronouns. But let's look instead at noun phrases, because that's what we're interested in. So these nouns, these common nouns and pronouns and proper nouns exist in phrases. And we know this. We have simple ones where, you know, could be a proper noun or a pronoun. He is sick. Matt is tall. Simple in the sense that they're just this one word. Noun phrase. What is that? What and that are both simple noun phrases. Also, that chair is uncomfortable. It's only a determiner and the head of the noun phrase. So those are the simple ones. And recognize that our proper nouns are very, very rarely going to have modifiers with them. Occasionally, you'll get something like a determiner, maybe you get like the Batman, right? Or maybe you go to a store. I remember one of the grammar books I have on the shelf here talks about you go to the store and you see, look at all the Barbies on the shelf. Okay. Barbie's a proper noun, but now we're kind of treating it like it's not, something like that. Pronouns, on the other hand, are also not going to get any kind of modifiers. Very, very rarely. We might have some stock phrases like, I think this is how they refer to Voldemort in Harry Potter, maybe. And also Harry Potter didn't invent this phrase, he who shall not be named. This is used for other people as well. But you're not going to get very, very rarely you're going to get some other kinds of modifiers with them. Complex ones, though, these have our modifiers. So the book that I borrowed, now we've got a book as a head noun, and we've got a post modifying relative clause there that I borrowed. A crisp winter afternoon in minus 20 degrees does wonders. We've got a nice long noun phrase there. It's got, it's a complex noun phrase. Afternoon is our head, but we've got pre-modifiers and determiners, crisp and winter pre-modifiers. We got post-modifier in negative 20 degrees, right? And then we've got a simple noun phrase, wonders, right? All right, I'm saying right again. And I'm also starting to take deep breaths. And I'm getting laughed at. All right, let's move on. Structure of noun phrases. This is what we learned in exploring grammar, right? You've got the head of noun phrases. You've got the head of noun phrase is going to be a noun or a pronoun. Very rarely it could be an adjective as well. Something like the, we have this. Equals we've got eat the rich. The rich is a noun phrase with an adjective as the head. So very, very rarely we can do that. Usually it's going to be a noun as the head. Then you got your determiners, articles, demonstratives, demonstrative pronouns, all this fun stuff. You remember the table from exploring grammar. I believe it's in your booklet as well, your grammar and use booklet. And then your modifiers. Post modification here on the hill, it's a prepositional phrase, which is common, but there's pre-modifiers, there's discontinuous modifiers, there's all kinds of fun modifiers. The differences between determiners and modifiers, determiners are always going to come before the head. Modifiers can be both before and after. We can have several different determiners. So check out the table in your booklet. with the different kinds of determiners, because we can actually order the determiners as well. So there's pre and central and post determiners. These are also required in the structure. There are cases where we have zero determiners, but these are going to be required. The modifiers, on the other hand, we can have several different kinds of modifiers or several modifiers in the phrase. And we can always remove modifiers. We can't always remove determiners. But depending on the modifier, if it's a, well, let's see if we have it coming up here. Hold on. We've got an exercise to do here. Well, depending on the type of modifier, it could be either essential or not for the structure, because you have certain modifiers that are possessives or something like that. But maybe we can do a practice here, see how much we remember. So exercise one from the file classes 5 and 6, exercises on noun phrase. I'm going to pause the recording here. Okay. Pre-modifiers are going to, and this is in the booklet in a little more detail, and of course in the Downing book, but pre-modifiers are going to express some kind of qualities that are either inherent or permanent or characteristic features of the head noun. The white knights of Lapland, the reddish sun at sunset, these are kinds of qualities that are characteristics of the head noun here, knights. They can be nouns, they can be adjectives, they can be adverbs, prepositional phrases, and noun phrases. A prepositional phrase pre-modifier would be something like a round the town trip. And there's different types of pre-modifiers. So we can have pre-modifiers that classify the head noun into some kind of location, or into they kind of locate the head noun in a certain space in a group. So if you think about, you know, the head noun being, you know, this, a set of all the things and that could be. So if we have a fire station as a noun phrase, well, station is our head noun. And then, you know, our set is every kind of station, but fire here is your classifier. And it's talking about, okay, this kind of station, same thing with a police station. There can also be what are called epithets, and these describe objective and subjective qualities. It's very clear in this example here with absolute zero and absolute rubbish that, you know, absolute zero, this is a scientific term. Absolute rubbish is more of a subjective term here. These are not always so clear, though. I recommend checking out the section of the Downing book about this, because they talk about how, you know, if you have something like a small boy, they talk about how small here would be objective, because, you know, society or the culture has an idea of what's small and what's not. And so, you know, everybody would kind of agree whether, you know, this constitutes small or not. If you ask me, however, small seems something that's subjective, right? These kinds of things, small, big, tall, short, these kinds of things are subjective, but you don't look at it as, you know, as a very scientific way. Instead, you look at it as, you know, it's presented like this because everyone would know if you said a small boy, then you have an idea that, okay, you have maybe a limit of how big this person could be. But so check that out. And I'll put it on the Moodle page. I'll point you to it so you can read it as well before our exam, because this might come in handy for the exam when we do an analysis. Okay. We can shift pre-modification with noun phrases. Adjective phrases we know can come before and pre-modify by the head noun. Adjective phrases can contain an intensifying adverb, so they have this pre-modifier adverb. something like too long a journey, but other ones as so, however, these kinds of things. The adjective phrases are built up like noun phrases, pre-modifiers, this kind of thing, ahead, like noun phrases have a head that's going to be a noun, adjective phrases have a head that's going to be an adjective. When the head, if the adjective phrase is a comparative adjective, then you get it preceded by in, you know, words like no or much or far or something like that. Far cheaper a method could be analyzed as a noun phrase because we have this, you know, adjective phrase pre-modifying it. Post modifiers are common in English. English likes to add information about the head noun after the head noun. This is something English tends to, it seems like, you know, we could say prefers, if the language can actually prefer anything, but this is a way of presenting information in English. So we add further information, we give the head noun, and then we give further information about it. English doesn't like to stack up too many things before the head noun. I mean, occasionally you'll see some things come before the head noun, but usually the head noun comes closer to the beginning of the noun phrase than the end of it, because we add this post modification on the end of it. And post modifiers can be, you know, full clauses. There's restrictive and non-restrictive post modification. The restrictive ones, they help identify or classify the head noun. And when we get restrictive ones, then you know, if we'd recognize this post modification as necessary for understanding or classifying the head noun, then it's going to be restrictive, especially when we have relative clauses. And those in writing are signaled by the lack of commas or punctuation to set them off. Some grammars say that they're signaled, they also don't contain a pause in spoken language, but I want you to take that with a grain of salt. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I would like to see some evidence of that. I think that if you listen to speakers, recognizing whether they pause or not is, well, you have to, the methodology in there, I would like to see basically. But in written language, restrictive relative clauses don't have punctuation marks before them. They're not set off with commas or parentheses or something like that. Non-restrictive, on the other hand, these are the ones that give additional information. They're not necessary for classifying the head noun. We already know what the head noun is, or we already have restricted it to a certain thing, and we don't need this information to identify the head noun. So these give additional information. When they're relative clauses, then we use commas or brackets or dashes or something like that to mark them off to show in writing. So examples here, the man who is standing on the corner is an old friend. We need this who is standing on the corner to identify the man that we're talking about. Whereas we have our boss, comma, who also sings in a choir, comma, is an avid golfer. We don't need this who sings in a choir to recognize or identify the boss here. I don't know, presumably we only have one boss. Maybe if we had many bosses and one of them sung in a choir, then this would become necessary restrictive information, but here it's not. Okay, let's talk a little bit about, and let me check the time we got here. Okay, a little bit of time. Let's talk a little bit about when a phrase is not, when a phrase is a phrase, because this is something maybe you are asking yourself, how to recognize, you know, the limits of the noun phrase. Where does it start and where does it end? And then where do I go on? There's ways we can test for phrases. So we could, we have two types of tests. We have a movement test and we have a replacement test. With our movement test, what we do is we take, what we think of a phrase, what we think the phrase is, and we take that and we try to move it to another part or separate it and have it still mean something. And if a group of words can be moved around or can be separated from where the other parts of the sentence and still mean something, then it's probably a phrase. So check examples here are my son made some donuts out of mud. You know, this my son could be moved around. Some donuts out of mud could be moved around. We could have something like some donuts out of mud were made by my son, for example. And then so they get moved around and they still mean something there. So we know then they're a phrase. We know that the phrase isn't my son made. We don't have some donuts out of mud were by my son made. That doesn't work. Or, you know, we don't have it analyzed like this. The replacement test is another one we can do. And we don't have to pick either or. We can try both of these tests. And here, what we do is we replace what we think of is the phrase by one word. And if we can do that, then it's probably a phrase, especially for noun phrases. Because if you know what pronouns do, is they take the place of noun phrases. Careful when you look at places online explaining pronouns. I'll put in the chat here, pronouns replace, I'll put it here, noun phrases, all caps there, not just nouns. So you often see places describing pronouns as things that stand in for nouns. They don't. They stand in for whole noun phrases. Noun phrases have determiners. Pronouns don't. You can't just pop out the head noun and put in a pronoun. It don't make any sense. So here he was only wearing a wide suggestive smile, and the man in the hallway was only wearing socks. So we could pop out the man in the hallway with he was only wearing socks. We could pop out a wide suggestive smile with it. He was only wearing it. Then we probably got a phrase there. So recognize the pronoun replaces the whole phrase. If we just replace the noun in there, then we would get the he in the hallway. And the he in the hallway is weird. Or he was only wearing a wide suggestive it. No, don't worry. So here's an example of the test. Julie seems very happy with her ridiculous selfies. Is very happy with her ridiculous selfies a phrase? Well, let's try our tests, movement tests. Let's move it. Very happy with her ridiculous selfies is how Julie seems. Kind of sounds like something Yoda might say, but it's perfectly acceptable. So bang. Let's try the replacement test. Julie seems happy. Also works. We replaced it with one word. No problem there. So it's probably a phrase. Julie seems very happy with her ridiculous selfies. So now let's test this very happy with. Is this a phrase? Let's move it. Very happy with is how Julie seems her ridiculous selfies. Nope, doesn't work. Marked with an asterisk, meaning ungrammatical. Replacement test. Julie seems happy her ridiculous selfies. Also doesn't work. Also marked with an asterisk here. So it's not a phrase. There's some examples here, which I don't think we need to go over necessarily for noun phrases in these sentences. Instead, I'd like to point to the middle page and show you your homework here. So the document that was on there had more than just the first exercise. So you've got your second exercise on noun phrase qualifiers and post modifiers. This is what I was talking about earlier in an earlier slide. And I will update the Moodle page to point you to the sections in the Downing book that describe some of these a little bit more. And then also let's do exercise 4. So focus only on pre-modification at this point. Mark the classifiers and the epithets there. Hold on a second. Finish in your study groups before next class. That works perfect because next class is in over a week. So yeah, so we have all next week off. Yeah. All right, let's pause the recording.